you know, the fans really showed up, you know, this first weekend, and we are so appreciative of that. We feed off of their energy, and, you know, Steve and Alex and David obviously, you know, did their job this off season and went and, you know, got guys to excite the fans and, you know, really put us in a good position to win this year. And the fans, you know, answered that call and showed up this weekend. And I'm so happy to see that. And, you know, I want to see it continue throughout this homestand and throughout this season, because they showed up big this weekend and we fed off their enthusiasm.
What stood out to you about the group so far?
This team is just, they're just pesky and just determined, and they never give up. They're just resilient, and obviously the bullpen came up big this series and today, and that's what you want. I mean, the hitters are going to go through streaks. They're going to come up big, and it's just one of those games where you really need the bullpen to step up. That's what really matters, and the pitching staff did an amazing job this weekend.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 6th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can get great additional content. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. Great promotions as well if you want to try it out. And of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. I call this the overreactions edition to the Talking Mets podcast. And you're probably asking, well, why, Mike? Why would you call this the overreactions edition to the show? You don't like to overreact. You like to be measured. You like to take a step back. You like to be the voice of reason. That's all correct. Nothing's changed. But when you start to look at a team in this getting to know you phase that we here at the Talking Mets podcast call it, the phase that lasts a couple of months up until Memorial Day, there's going to be things that stand out in small sample sizes, and nothing is more small sample size than the first, like, 2 weeks of the season. And what's funny is some of the overreactions, the emails I'm getting about the offense, about Mendoza, about the starting rotation, about Soto, you name it. I mean, text messages from friends and family. I mean, there's always going to be an overreaction in a world of social media, in a world of 24/7, 365 content, in a world where everybody has an opinion and everybody has the ability to put out an opinion, and you have so much internet time, air time, radio time, whatever you want to call it, to fill. This is what's going to happen. So why don't we join the party and overreact? But we're going to overreact in a productive, professional, and honest and responsible way, if there's such a thing. But so that's what we're going to do. We're going to go a little bit of some good overreactions, maybe some concerning overreactions. Mets coming off a 3-game sweep of the Blue Jays, a cold, bitterly cold, I mean, not a weekend for baseball at Citi Field, makes you think the Mets should probably, and the Yankees for what it's worth, should maybe the Phillies you add in there, Boston, any of these really Northeast teams, the 4 or 5 Northeast teams out there. I don't really think you call the Pirates that. But what you want to do is probably put these teams on the road for at least 2 weeks, I have to tell you. I know that the seasons are kind of like different now. Fall, you know, winter lasts longer. Fall kind of bleeds to where it got cold in winter. And all, you know, whatever. And then maybe summer starts a little later than normal, whatever. I'm not going to get into all that. But at the very least, if you're going to start this season in late March, not like the olden days where the season would start around April 10th, and yes, even April 10th, you'd have bitterly cold days at the old Shea Stadium. If you're going to start it late March, you're going to have to think about starting these East Coast teams on the road, because I don't think this was baseball weather. And one of the first small sample overreactions I'll give, and it was brought up by Carlos Mendoza, it was brought up by the players, they hear it, they notice it. Brandon Nimmo, you heard him in the open talk about it, is the fans. And we'll start there, because I think that's important. Because the fans, at this time last year, things were really ugly with the fan base. They got ugly with me. I always tell you the story when I call the fans out for how negative and toxic they were during that 0-5 start on the homestand against Milwaukee. I think it was Detroit as well. It was ugly. It was a really ugly scenario. And this weekend had all the makings of, okay, let's see where the fans are since the summer of OMG and Grimace and the great run the Mets had. And are we finally seeing the fan base shed some of the paranoia and negativity? Every sports fan is going to be negative and paranoia. Every sports fan, for the most part, is going to wait for the roof to cave in. Every sports fan thinks that their team is unlucky or their team has it worse than the other guy. The grass is always greener on the other side. But Mets fans have taken it to quite an extreme level. And I'll tell you what. I'm not going to get into what the exact attendance was. The ballpark looked pretty full. It wasn't a ghost town. I really expected Saturday night, the day after opening day, for it to be, it was just bitterly cold Saturday night, rainy. I didn't know how they were going to get games in this week, and the Mets got really lucky. I know there's still some rain in the forecast Monday and Tuesday. It seems like the rain has really been either early in the day or late in the day. They've given you enough of a window to really get the ball games in. But the fans showed up Friday on opening day. It was electric. I know the Mets didn't hit a hell of a lot, but when they did get runners on base, when they did get rallies, I mean, the place was raucous. Pete Alonso's home run, the place was raucous. The place was raucous with Jesse Winker's near home run that turned out to be a triple. The place was raucous, you know, with the Mets getting some of the big outs from the bullpen today. The fans were great, and the players are feeding off of it. The players are feeling it. There was some storylines here early that you were looking for. How are the fans going to react to Pete Alonso and Pete having a, I want to say too messy, but a somewhat messy negotiation with the organization during the offseason. Soto off to a blah start. You know, when a 129 OPS plus is blah, you know how good this guy is. I mean, did you see during the broadcast that only two players through the age of 25, Jimmy Fox and Mickey Mantle, have a higher on-base percentage? I mean, you just sit back. This is an elite hitter. When this guy is going bad, his floor is going to be like the elite or dream season of some other players. So I really want to say, and I see it because I've been a part of this thing for a long time. I've been doing this independent media for almost 20 years, and I've had my ups and downs with the fan base, and I know I'm a small business. I'm not Walmart. I'm not the Walmart, the Target, the big super center, big supermarket of Mets media or Mets content creation or Mets independent media. I'm like that little corner store in a nice neighborhood that has a good following, but by no means am I up there with those other guys. I'm not a mass marketed type of situation. I'm a niche product. I'm for a specific fan. And I think that fan is growing. And I always feel like I get a good overall feel of what's going on with the fan base. Now, some of the extremes on both sides maybe don't come here, because they don't get what they want. If you're an extreme fan that wants extreme negativity and narratives or extreme positivity and validation of your BS narratives, you're not going to come here because you're not going to get it. You know that. Those who listen know they're not going to get that. But I think I have a good cross culture of what's going on. And I have to say, after some of the ugliness about a year ago at this time when the Mets got off to a bad start, after a winter when Stearns took over that really was marketed against the team, because of the way they failed to cover the accuracy of what the Mets were doing from the trade deadline 2023 forward, it's a complete 180. I mean, I think the postseason had a lot to do with it. I think the fans are starting to understand the role that the media plays, especially the mainstream media, the WFANs, and the national media. Less so about the local, because let's face it, the beat writers are starting to become a bit of a dinosaur. There's only a few left. The papers aren't covering the team in the same way. The fans have finally learned, hey, the Mets have a plan here. The Mets are trying to do something pretty cool. And they have an owner that's spending money, but they also have a president of baseball operations and a front office with a lot of people we don't talk about that understand how to go out and build a complete roster, which was really, if you think about the last few times the Mets had runs under Omar Minaya, under Sandy Alderson, it was always about the core 8 to 10 to 12 players on the roster, and it was always a roll of the dice, and it always seemed to fall up short. It was really why the Mets failed in a lot of ways. Maybe even if you look at some of what went wrong in the late 90s under Bobby Valentine and Steve Phillips, it always seemed to be why they failed, because they weren't able to really build some depth. And that's going to be part of some of the overreaction here as we start off about how it's exciting to see some of the depth, particularly in the bullpen, of guys that you would not have thought about, not $10 or $12 million a year veteran arms bringing in, but no-name guys that the Mets just went out and acquired via different ways that are out there. So the fans deserve a kudos. If the players are talking about it and Mendoza's talking about it, it matters. Remember, it matters. Your support matters. And nobody's out there telling you to be Pollyannish and accept bad play, effortless play, poor execution. But you also have to know the variability in how hard baseball is. Baseball's a sport of high level of failure, 70% plus failure on the offensive side. And winning a championship, if you go back to what we always talk about, the best teams have a 17% chance. So think about the Dodgers and the great start they're off to and how everybody's putting them as the 96 Bulls of baseball. They're like the traveling band. They're the Beatles of baseball. Whatever. We'll see how long that lasts. They have like less than a 20% chance of winning it all. So this thing is hard. So I think understanding what is in front of everybody, the challenge of winning it all, going out there, having fun, supporting the team, feeling good about the team and the effort and the process they're putting out there, I think that's all you could ask for, and I think the fans are starting to understand that. And the Mets easily could have succumbed, and I'll start also there as an overreaction. I think you saw some really big character wins this week. We talked about it on Beyond the Mic after the big getaway day win, you know, late afternoon win against the Marlins on, what was it, Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday afternoon before the day off. Mets are down 4-1 late. Pete Alonso brings them back to life. So many opportunities for them even after that to succumb and lose. Some big plays they made. Big play by Torrens on a tag. Big play by Lindor to throw somebody out at the plate. Big pitching by Huascar Brazembon and you know, the Mets, who didn't have their closer and may have been an arm short in the bullpen that day to get out of the jam in extra innings. And I said that was a character win. But if you look at this weekend, especially, I think, Saturday night, to me, Saturday night was even more important. And the fans played, you know, a part of it, too, because what was it? I'm going to get his name. When we were watching the game on Saturday, here they are. They're down 2-0. And it did not look good. It did not look good for the Mets to come back in this one. So they're down 2-0. And they got this, Sandlin, which the fans, I guess, were counting down on a pitch clock with him coming in. And you got Winker up against the lefty Little. And, you know, the thing here is, really, those are the kind of games where you just don't expect. You know, the Mets just weren't getting anything done. Again, Chris Bassitt, an old friend, shutting them down. Can't get anything going. All of a sudden, the Mets get a rally. They hit a couple balls hard. It's in that really heavy air that is what the mark of what Citi Field is. And nothing is going right. But here they are. Winker's up there. He's always been, you guys know it, he's been a thorn in the Mets' side when he's on the opposition. You know, he's up there, tough at bat, knows how to take tough pitches, and he gets a hanger and he drives it, which I think on a warm day would have been a 3-run home run, and that place would have really come down, the roof would have really come down, and he'd get a big hit. But to me, that's a character win, and then Diaz goes out there and he's able to navigate some trouble, and then the Mets are able to come back, and good job by Lindor against the tough customer and Jeff Hoffman, going up there, honing in on a pitch that he could hit, and knowing his job with a speedy runner on third in Siri to go out there and make sure that he executes with a runner on third and less than two outs. And that, to me, that's a character win. And even to a certain extent today, Peterson doesn't have it. Walks five batters, gets nauseous, dizzy, has some kind of, you know, virus or, you know, whatever may have, maybe some vertigo, whatever you want to call it, that happened in the fifth inning. all the markings of a team. You know, France is tough customer again. Mets have faced a lot of tough pitching. They faced Alcantara. They faced Framber Valdez. They faced Bassett, Kevin Gausman. Like, they faced, in their nine games, they faced about five or six really tough pitchers. So that plays a little bit into the offense not being complete. There's more to it. We'll look into that in a bit. But these are character-building wins. These are games that it's easy to say in Miami, getaway day. We don't have it. Let's just get out of here, get a day off, wash it off, go home. Eighth inning, look, you know, again, it's cold night. We don't have it. We can't hit these guys, you know, just not grinding the at-bats out, go home. Today it was one or two pitches away. Give Max Kranich credit. Give the bullpen credit. Breakout candidate of the year. Talking Mets breakout candidate of the year. Reed Garrett, again, coming up with a big inning. Mets go out and get the job done. So to me, as you build what you're trying to build here during the getting to know you phase, two anecdotal, non-baseball related, non-statistical related things. The fan base, which traveled exceptionally, I mean, maybe it's not traveling in Miami. I've said this, I can't believe how many New Yorkers are down in Florida now. I mean, how the heck, if you're the Miami Heat, how the heck, if you're the Miami Marlins, how are they ever going to get a home field advantage with all these damn New Yorkers going down there? The Citi Field crowd on a weekend where either you A, shouldn't show up, B, should bail on it early, C, should be angry and upset because you're not seeing very much activity, especially from big, big moneyed offensive players. You know, the booing easily could have started. I could see the booing with Soto start. Nope, not at all. The fans are staying positive. So those are two. Now, are those overreactions? If Soto's hitting .180 in 3 weeks and he's still not really unwinding from what seems to be a bit of a slow start, his bat speed's down a little bit, we'll see how the fans tolerate him. But I have really not many concerns that that is going to be the case. So character building wins, which we talked about over on Beyond the Mic, the fans showing up this weekend. Another big thing here that is going to be really interesting, because all the talk when Soto came over here was like, hey, he doesn't have Judge anymore. And I kept saying to everybody, he had a big year in New York with the Yankees. We knew that. And he wasn't so as good. He was still good, but his time in San Diego, it wasn't the same level Soto that you were used to. Nobody really quite put their finger, though 2023 was pretty good. 2022 when he went over was blah. He wasn't great in the postseason against the Mets. He's still, I mean, that, and that's his floor. If your floor is a 778 OPS, 127 OPS plus, that's pretty damn good. But you know, one of the things that has marked Soto's career, specifically after the Nats ripped the damn thing apart and took away his protection, was intentional walks. In Washington in 2021, he was intentionally walked 23 times. And with the Padres in 2023, he was walked 11 times intentionally. Now, in 2024, the Yankees only twice, because you got Judge behind you. And you got to pick your poison. And even if you're not intentionally walking Soto, you're going to have pitchers look at the lineup, see first base open if there's two outs and nobody on, or if there's a runner on second or third, and say, you know, I'm just not going to pitch to him. I'm going to go after Alonso, because Alonso has not been anything special probably for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, since early 2023. And maybe one of the biggest benefactors of Soto in front of them is going to be Pete, because you already saw Pete work the count against Quantrill and get the grand slam. He had the big two-run homer on Friday, big RBI today. What, he's got 11 RBIs already in nine games? So you give me, you know, half a season in 10. You know, he goes 90 games in. He's on pace to have 100 RBIs a little after the midway point of the All-Star break. Now, I heard Ron Darling had said he's on, you know, he's a guy that could get 150 ribeye steaks in this lineup with Soto in front of him. Maybe that's a little overstated, but here's a guy that over a two-year span in 2022, specifically in 2023, you know, averaged about 120, 125 RBIs. When he's been on his rookie year, he got 120 RBIs. In 2022, when he got some MVP votes and finished in the top 10 in the MVP, he had 131 ribeye steaks out there. Pete is going to have a lot of opportunities to drive in runners, and I think he's going to be a huge key to this offense, Because let's face it, Soto, he's going to get his. And they're not always going to be able to walk him. But they're going to be careful with him. And the thing about Soto is when he gets a pitch to hit, he's probably not going to miss it. You can't necessarily say that about Alonso all the time. You know, he's not a guy that's going to miss every mistake. He's not at the same level as Soto. But he's going to have a lot of opportunities. And for him, after an offseason where there were questions about his future, how good is he? Is he going to be as good as he was early in his career? Are you facing a Richie Sexton decline type of situation? What you've seen early on is Pete Alonso's approach is better. I thought his at-bat against Fauché on Wednesday was incredibly impressive. He's out there. He's taking close pitches. You know, yes, he's still striking out and missing some pitches. He's going to strike out. He's going to miss pitches. But if he works the count, and like today, he took the single. You don't have to always swing from your, you know, butt here. It's not always about the three-run home run. If Pete could do the things that we saw him do, in particularly 2022, when we thought he was turning the corner and we were starting to question, not question, but hope that he was becoming maybe Paul Goldschmidt. This could be an exciting situation. You could see a 40, 45 home run, 130 RBI, 2022 year from Pete Alonso. And that's not Aaron Judge. No one's ever going to say he's going to be Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is right there with Soto as a top 10 offensive player in the history of baseball. Pete Alonso is not a top 10 history of baseball player. He's a very good player. He hovers from being, you know, at his best in prime Goldschmidt to a, you know, maybe a better version of Paul Konerko. I mean, he's in that, you know, very good all-star, very good all-star. And there's nothing wrong with that. So he's going to have a lot of opportunities. I think it's going to be exciting to see. I think he's a big key to this offense. I think when this offense goes, he's going to be part of it. I think he's going to be able to. And if he continues to hit, and pitchers know they will be punished by Pete Alonso, it is only going to help Soto. Look, Soto will take the walk, but you didn't pay $50-plus million a year to get yourself a walk machine. That's a byproduct of, you know, not getting pitches to hit. You paid $50-plus million to get a guy who's going to hit 40 home runs, drive 120 runs, and be the elite core offensive player that this team hasn't really had maybe ever at this level. Mets have never had Jimmy Fox or Mickey Mantle in their lineup. They've had some really good offensive players. Piazza, Hernandez, Carter. You know, Strawberry at one point, they thought that was going to be who he was, but they've never had this level and have it consistently. So this could be a big RBI year for Pete, which ultimately might get him paid. We'll see. There's going to be a lot of interesting things. That's for a later conversation about the economy of baseball with the lockout, the global economy, and all the things going on here with our world. So that's another conversation for another day. And, you know, a couple of other quick things before we take a break and then talk, maybe overreact to some of the concerns. Did we figure out the bullpen here? So I railed against this bullpen all of last year. The walks, the walks, the walks. You know, only a couple of teams had more walks than them. 100 loss, Anaheim, historically bad with Chicago. Well, guess what? The Mets bullpen is in the top bottom of the league in walks now. They're not walking as many batters. They've been dominant. You go up and down this bullpen, and outside of Danny Young, everybody's giving you what you want. I think what's really a big key is you got not one, not two, you got three guys in Kranich, Huascar Brazenban, who has been incredibly, he's back, you know, this is the player that you thought you were getting at the deadline last year. And Jose Buto, who can give you multiple innings. So here you go, and it's a bit of a problem. The starters have been good, but they're not giving you length. So we'll talk about that. But you've been able to mitigate that early on as they try to figure themselves out with multi-inning performances by a Kranich, by a Brazenban, by a Buto. So you're still getting guys like Stanek, Reed Garrett, obviously Diaz, that one inning in key A, they're your A team in key spots. But whether you're behind, tied, or trying to bridge some innings and extra innings, whatever, these guys are able to do it. And these guys are able to do it really well. And it's almost like you have a piggyback starter. Because that's really, in a way, in some ways, that's what they're acting at today to a certain degree. Kranich was that, to a lesser extent, piggyback starter. I was even thinking to myself, And it doesn't look like this is going to be necessary. When Peterson came out and there was thoughts that maybe there was something wrong with his hip or his back, you know, nobody knew it was something maybe viral. That, hey, if they need a starter in the coming days, why not just do an opener? I mean, Kranick could probably give you two or three innings. Brazenbaum give you two or three innings. I know it's going to burn your bullpen, but you've got Nunez, you've got Zubar, you've got guys you could bring up from the minors to maybe take their spot. You know, this is something you could think about potentially during doubleheaders when you need to spot a sixth starter. I don't know what the set status of Blackburn is. It'll be actually quite interesting when Blackburn is ready to come back, what they do. Because right now, there's nobody that deserves to go down. Brazenbaum deserves to stay. Kranick deserves to stay. Maybe Danny Young, and maybe you lose him because he's lefty and he's got some good stuff. And he's been the, you know, the guy that's not pulling his weight, the guy that makes you nervous. He was having a hard time closing out a blowout the other day. Maybe he's the guy to go. And then when Blackburn comes back and you got that sixth starter, like you look and you're saying to yourself, well, where does Nunez come into this whole thing? So the Mets have, between Zubar and Nunez and potentially Blackburn, depth and a good problem to have. And I think they're going to be able to navigate these games where they're starters, especially if early in the season where it looks like the Mets still have them somewhat on a pitch limit, or they're not really comfortable with them going the third time around the order against maybe any team or certain teams. They're in a good spot there. So that's another, I mean, I can't ask for more from this bullpen. The walks are down. They're throwing strikes. They're giving you multiple innings. They're getting the big outs when you need it. These are all the things that drove me bananas last year. And it's the exact opposite this year. You can't ask for more than that. And finally, before we take a break, and then, you know, because we wanted to start positive here, before we take a break, I think the defense has been pretty good. Torrens' arm, and I'm going to tell you this, there is no guarantee when Alvarez comes back that he's guaranteed to play every day. I think you, and I think in late innings, I would not be surprised if in against a speedy team, a team that has, you know, in a one-run game or a tie game, and they have some, you know, let's say with Turang of Milwaukee, or a team that has some speed at the top, you know, maybe the Yankees with a Volpe or something like that. Like, if you bring in Torrens, especially when you have a guy like Diaz up that doesn't really, you know, can't really throw runners out, having Torrens in there is big. And if Torrens, to me, I know he's under control, has some pop. I'm not saying he's the best hitter. Maybe he's only the league average. But with his arm, and he's no better or worse than Alvarez in framing there. Maybe Alvarez is a little bit better, but even blocking pitches, they're about the same. A lot of that has to do with technique, with how everybody gets down on a knee now. But I don't see why Torrens can't make a strong argument for being a starter in this lineup. And you could get the best of both worlds. And it holds Alvarez accountable. And his defense has been good. I think Siri in center field, every bit the center fielder that Bader is. He's a disruptor on the base paths. He can't hit worth a lick. I think Bader is actually a better hitter. But he got a big walk late on Saturday night. So I think his bat's a problem. I think he's beginning to profile more and more like a Michael Taylor backup defensive center fielder, pinch runner, but we'll give him a chance. He's a guy, when the lineup is lengthened, that you don't really mind hitting ninth or something along that way. Lindor, I know he made some, you know, errors early in the week, continues to show you how he can make big plays, his play in Miami. Pete continues to scoop things up at first. I don't think people realize, I know this stat was brought up during his free agency, how big those scoops are, especially with a shortstop like Lindor, who's not always, you know, having the strongest arm. I know Beatty, we'll get to Beatty and his bat in a minute. Beatty and Acuna at second base have been solid. Acuna's been really good. Beatty has held his own, turning double plays. And even Vientos, I know that his bat hasn't gotten going, and I know, you know, he's a little choppy at times at third base, but he's making the plays. He's passable. And, you know, I don't expect a gold glove. I don't expect Brooks Robinson at third base for Vientos. You want someone who can make the plays. And his arm is, especially on some of these balls that are hit deep in the hole and a really strong arm is needed to throw runners out, that's actually an asset. Don't discount that. So maybe we're overreacting. You know, maybe a lot of these character building wins, these one-run games, that there's a lot of variability. The stat people always tell you, hey, you can't rely on that. They always are 50-50 shots. When you're in a one-run game, whether you're against the Atlanta Braves, the Phillies, the Dodgers, or the worst team in baseball, whether it's the White Sox or whoever, all it takes is a bloop and a blast, and you lose, and everybody's got, they're big league teams, everybody's got bullpen arms that can get your hitters out. Yeah, so watch out. They're right about that, but these build character, and right now, one of the biggest things you wanted to see was there any kind of carryover, because it's hard in baseball to carry things over day to day. You're only as good as your next, you know, sometimes the opposing team's pitcher. But there is momentum in and vibes and feel that are built. And right now you're seeing a lot of similarities to the OMG Grimace Mets here very early in the season, with how they're building character and always in ball games and grinding out wins. And like Carlos Mendoza said in the post game today, you got to take it day by day. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's overreact to some of the things that are bothering us. You probably know what some of them are. I know the offense is bothering you. Why are the Mets not able to put up enough crooked numbers? And they probably should have won a couple of these games, if not all of them, rather easily. And they're not exactly hitting the you-know-what out of the baseball. So you're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Perhaps even more encouraging, just the way that you guys are winning these games, how close they've been, you know, not much offense, the pitching staff coming through, knowing kind of what your offense is capable of.
Yeah, and that shows you that, you know, we're a good team, and we'll continue to find ways to get the job done. And that's what it's all about at this level, finding a way to come through to get the job done, whether we're not getting the big hit, because we're creating traffic. You know, we're getting guys on base, and, you know, if we continue to do that, we're going to be in a good place. But now the pitching, you know, especially that bullpen, has been huge for us, and that's what it's going to take. You know, they're not going to be perfect back there, and then there's going to be times where the offense will pick those guys up. There's going to be stretches where the starters are going to go deep in games, and that's how it goes. And like I said, it's good that we're getting the victories now.
All right, we're back, and look, we're going to overreact to the bad, too. It's not all peaches and cream here, despite the Mets winning 6-9 here, and with the Miami Marlins coming in, a hope of another 2 out of 3 Mets could go out on their, well, they're going to Oakland or Sacramento or whatever the hell the A's play in Minnesota for their second road trip of the year. And, you know, not everything is peaches and cream. So let's start with the offense. And, I mean, look, I don't want to start getting to where the offense ranks and things like that. You know, going into today's game, they've only scored 31 runs. They scored 2 today, 33 runs in 9 games. You know, it's less than 4 runs a game. You're not going to win a lot of ball games averaging 3.8 runs per game. I don't care how good it is. Your starting pitching, which has been really good, your bullpen that's been really good, they're not going to shut down the Dodgers. They're not going to shut down you know, I know the Braves have been bad and they're struggling. Those bats are going to come around. The Phillies, you know, you go on and on. Arizona, there's some good offensive teams in the National League. And you're going to have to win 6-4 games. You're going to have to score 8 runs and come back to win ball games. You can't average 3.5 runs a game. Nor do I think the Mets, who right now have Francisco Lindor, Mark Vientos, is hitting significantly below league average right now. You could take that stance, but, and I'll look, and I did this very quickly at Baseball Savant. You know, the Mets are top 5 in hardball hit rate. They're bottom of the league in launch angles, so I think they're not necessarily hitting a lot of line drives, so take that what you want. They're not a team that chases, so that's good. That's a good thing. But one of the things I did notice is, and this is something that I saw straight from the eye test, they are very susceptible to off-speed pitches. So when they get, and I'll give you a perfect example. I think it was Vientos in today's ball game. He took, and he struck out on a fastball, but he took like a, was it 1-1 fastball, maybe right down the middle. And I was like, why is he doing that? Why do you want to get into a 2-strike count? And I'm all about working counts and things like that. But to me, when you get your pitch to hit, especially when it's a fastball, and 1-1 is a good hitter's count, go after it. Chase, you know, crush it, especially when it's right there. What are you looking for? And then you wind up striking out, looking at a pitch, again, in a similar spot down the middle. And then I started to look, and I'm not going to go through them. Maybe it's a beyond the mic, you know, deeper dive at some point with a larger sample size. But right now, changeups, curveballs, sliders, the Mets, for the most part, especially their big hitters, they're not hitting them. And, you know, I don't have an answer for that. Remember, they face Framber Valdez. They face Josh Hader for a couple innings. So last weekend, a third of the innings were against some really good pitching. They faced Sandy Alcantara. They faced Bassett and Gausman and, you know, Francis today. Toronto has some good pitching. Maybe their bullpen's eh. But even those bullpen arms, Chad Green, all these guys, they're not chopped liver. I mean, just because they had a bad game, they're not chopped liver. Mendoza mentioned it. They're getting runners on base. They're not necessarily getting the big hit. They're also not executing. I mean, look, this could have been an easier ball game if Brett Beatty just hit a fly ball. If he had one big hit, the few times they got the leadoff man on, which I think was like three or four times in the first six innings, this is probably a 5-1, 6-1 game, easy peasy, you know, rocking chair, maybe eighth and ninth inning. You're not holding your breath with Diaz there and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. up, and all you keep saying is, I see visions of, you know, a double off the wall or a three-run home run or something like that. So it's hard to say why they're not hitting. You know, the excuse makers could say, hey, small sample size early in the season, they'll get on track. That's not unfair, but that's not totally fair. You know, you don't want to just rely on that. You also could look at and say, okay, Lindor starts off slowly, so, you know, he's a big part of the offense. Soto's getting adjusted to his new team. You know, is there some part of him that, like when he chased Hader's pitch there in the ninth inning a week ago, that because of the contract, because of the scrutiny, because, you know, I don't know what he reads or what he hears. Seems like every day some content creator, and I'm sure it'll start making its way into the mainstream, is looking at some rando Yankee who's off to a good start in 20 at-bats saying, look at what Ben Rice is doing. Look at what Trent Grisham is doing. Look at the difference between him and Soto, like a little teenage girl, you know, because they're upset. You know, the whole thing about the Yankee fan, they're acting, and this is on a whole, they're acting like a teenage girl who's stalking Facebook, making sure that their ex-boyfriend, or even a teenage boy, I'll make, you know, let's not be sexist here, you know, stalking Facebook or Instagram to see how miserable their ex is without them. That's all they're doing. It's pretty friggin' ridiculous what's going on. So, you know, the subtle care about that, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, there's some of that. But really, when you look at it, you have the good pitchers they faced. There is some concern here because you have the small sample size analytics against off-speed pitches. You have the lack of a launch angle. So not, you know, but even today, I could even argue that and say, look, Pete hits a line drive late that I thought on a warm day would have probably been doing some damage with a couple of runners on. Soto hit a couple of balls hard. You know, there is some ball, you know, Nimmo on Saturday night, the inning that Winker got the big hit, he hit a ball hard to center field, probably the wrong part of the ballpark. I mean, it's not really the kind of place Citi Field right now, and I don't think it's getting any better against Miami in the next couple of days to hit, really. You know, maybe the day game on Wednesday will be better. It's not time to panic, but there is some things to look at, and it is frustrating because you're almost 10 games in, and you're like, hey, I haven't really seen this offense click outside of the 10-run outburst, which included a grand slam against Pete Alonso. You're seeing a lot of the similar frustrations this team has had for years where they have some good core hitters, they have some soft spots in the lineup, and they could put up a crooked number, and then that's it. So you're relying on the pitching and the defense to get you through the rest of the game, and it worked today, but there are some days, you know, you're not going to be able to score two runs and probably beat the Dodgers on the road. You know, you can, but not every game, and you're gonna need to start having that traffic come home. You're going to need to start working counts, and you may be going to need to hit a couple off-speed pitches once in a while, so we'll see. I think the bottom of the order is a big problem right now because, you know, Alvarez, you know, here I am. I just said Torrens could challenge him and I didn't say he's taking his job and making him a backup. I think Torrens could play more than you think. But Alvarez and the power that he provides at the bottom of the order, and I'm assuming he'll be like a seventh hitter or eighth hitter when he comes back, you know, that's a big deal. You get a couple of runners on base, and that's a big deal. And all of a sudden, you know, you wreck a game. Or you put pressure on a pitcher, you have them work a little bit more. We'll see what version of Alvarez comes back. Right now, it's midnight for Brett Beatty. I'm seeing nothing change. You know, we talked about spring training. The guy is a good kid. You know, he's a nice kid, son of a coach, top pick. He's definitely an athlete. He has made tremendous strides on the defensive side. If you had told me just 2 years ago this kid would be playing second base and playing it adequately, I would have laughed at you. He couldn't play the corner. You got to put him up the middle? But he looks like Joey Wendell up there. He really does. He looks like a guy that is going to be a utility guy off the bench and not hit. And I don't know how much of room in the big leagues there is for those kind of guys in this day and age. And, you know, here's an opportunity with the bases loaded. All you need is a fly ball, and he's not catching up to fastballs. And that's a concern. He's not catching up to fastballs either. He's not reading it. He's not, his bat speed. I'm not going to even look at the metrics on the bat speed. I think they were actually quite solid, the metrics on the bat speed. We know he hits a lot of ground balls, which is always going to compromise his results. But in general, in that situation, shorten up and get the run in. We're not seeing it. We're not seeing anything by Beatty. And look, I love Siri's defense and his base running, but you and I know that he's not here to hit. He's here to pop an occasional home run, play defense, and provide you solid base running when he is on. And in a lot of ways, when you have Beatty, Singer, who is a nice third string catcher, maybe backup, and Siri in the bottom third of your lineup, for three times through the order, that's 3 of 9 innings, a third of the game, you really don't have a good chance of getting anything going. So that's something to look at. Now, that should be mitigated. And what I laugh about is everybody was ready to throw McNeil to the Sharks during spring training when Beatty's got an OPS of 1,000 and they love Acuna because he's got some speed and he's got a good last name. And I kept telling everybody, hold on. You know, whether McNeil comes back and is the old McNeil that slaps and hunts for base hits, which I think that version of McNeil is dead, or he's the Daniel Murphy clone that we saw in the second half, whatever version, or hybrid, because he's been hybrids throughout his career. The guy can hit. I'm sorry. Jeff McNeil did not all of a sudden forget how to hit, unless he's injured. And I don't know if he's going to use a torpedo bat. What's he going to come back? What's he going to do? Because he's always, you know, he had the knobless bat for a while. The Mets, you know, you're going to tell me today with the bases loaded and Beatty up, you wouldn't want McNeil in that situation? You don't think McNeil could have provided a decent at-bat and maybe driven in a run in that situation? I think McNeil lengthens the lineup. I think when you get McNeil and Alvarez back, I think then whether you have Torrens in the lineup or Alvarez, you're going to get yourself a better 1-9. I'll actually say this. I'm wondering, looking at the 9 hole, looking at how you have Lindor who can drive in runs and then Soto two batters away, do you even think about batting McNeil 9th to get a liver bat down there to get more traffic? Because I think the thing is, with Soto, to mitigate maybe them pitching around them a little bit, you want to get some more traffic on base. You're not going to do that with Siri in the number 9 hole. Now, I know that that's a weird thing because you're like, okay, what if there's runners on? Wouldn't you rather have McNeil like today when Beatty's up? But maybe you put like Siri 8th and maybe put a better hitter 9th, even Alvarez maybe? Just something to think about. I know that there's a lot of, high-level analytics about back in the day when it was the pitcher batting 8th versus 9th. And I know that there was some incremental studies that showed that you're basically going to have a minimal amount of runs over the course of 162 games. But to me, I would put Siri in the 8th hole, put a livelier bat in the 7th hole, maybe put Alvarez 7th, because Alvarez's power, even Torrens' power, could really play well. And then you have McNeil 9, and away you go. So you have your Lindor, Soto, Pete, Nimmo, Vientos, 1-5. All right? And then you have, who am I missing here? You have... I'm missing some. I'm like drawing a blank here on the air. So you have Lindor, Soto, Pete, Nimmo, Vientos. That's 5. Okay, and then you have your Winker, 6. I'm sorry. Your Winker-Marte combo. And I do think at some point, depending on how Marte And I know he hit a home run. Marte, to me, only should play against lefties. I wonder if that's an upgrade at some point, a better righty bat. Another story another day. Or Tyrone Taylor, whatever, if you want to do that pinch hitting scenario. Then you go Siri. Then you go your Alvarez. You go Alvarez, then Siri. Alvarez, Torrens, then Siri. Then you go McNeil. Something to think about. They need McNeil in this lineup to lengthen the lineup. Now, McNeil is like Daniel Murphy clone. You want him higher, and then maybe you move Alvarez down more. But I'm wondering, do you get a livelier bat? Now, Siri on base could create some havoc, so maybe at number 9, I'm overthinking it. But that's something I would think about to get the offense going. But certainly there is some concern about the offense. There should be a lot of concern about Beatty. And if when he gets, and at this point, he's the guy I would send down and keep Acuña around. Because Acuña could give you diversity in terms of positions he could play. He's got speed. He's a good defensive player. He could spot Lindor if Lindor needs to be spotted, even in a blowout. And, you know, I think his future is as a super utility guy. I never thought he was an everyday player. But we'll see. Personally, after I saw the at-bats today, I would give him more burn here and playing time until McNeil comes back. I just don't see anything about the Beatty process that's changed. And I know that I've picked on him for so long, but I just don't see it. I was open-minded. You guys know I was open-minded about it. I was willing to try, but, you know, it didn't work. Now, the last thing here, and, you know, again, I want to be, you know, couch this by saying you don't want to overreact to a small sample size. So here I look at the starters. I got McGill, Canning, Griffin Canning, Clay Holmes, David Peterson, Kodai Senga, all with extremely healthy ERA pluses, all with the exception of Holmes, pretty solid whips. And, you know, away you go here when it comes to the starting rotation. Now, they're giving you on average, and right now, the Mets starting rotation, I'm going to get you this stat. I should have brought this up before the show, and I didn't. So on average, I think they're going about 5 innings, but let's see what we got here. So Mets starting pitchers. We already talked about the bullpen. Bullpen's been solid. Mets starting pitchers. Okay. So from a war perspective, the Mets are 10th in wins above replacement as a starting rotation. And the starting rotation in 9 games, well, I shouldn't say in 8 games, has given you 40 innings. 8, 60, 24. So they're giving you about 5 innings per start. Ironically, the best team in baseball out of the rotation is Cincinnati. And the Dodgers, the 96 Bulls, are actually, in terms of win shares, are slightly behind the Mets and giving slightly more innings there. And you got Blake Snell on the injured list and things like that. You know, the future of right now, until they start really getting workhorses, the future of baseball is, you know, starters that are really strong 2 times around the order, building a bullpen with some really durable guys that could go 3 or 4 out of 5 days, usually 3 out of 5 days, and could give you multiple innings, potentially, and a deeper bullpen. Really, I mean, I think it's just the way this thing has gone for a variety of reasons, probably because of the velocity, the amount of pitches you have to throw. I mean, everything is different than it was 35 years ago. But at this point, you go 5 innings with your starter, multi-inning guys bridge, and then you have your A guys in the 8th and 9th inning that go 1 inning. What it's good to see is that you've seen a bit of a back to the future with bullpens here that are actually, you know, guys that can go more than 1 inning. That's good. But the Mets starting rotation is only giving you 5 innings. And as far as an ERA, they're in the top 10 with a FIP of 3.39. Their xFIP on Fangraphs is a little bit better. They're top 5. The walks, let's look at the walks here real quick while we're together. That's where it's a little bit dicey. They're walking over 4 per 9. So that's a bad thing. Clay Holmes is contributing a lot to that. The hits per 9 innings, let's see. Let's see there. You know, they have the highest ground ball percentage, so that's a good thing. And as far as strikeouts, they're 3rd in strikeouts per 9 innings. And that's a little bit behind the Phillies and Arizona. And the Phillies have guys like Wheeler and Nola and things like that. So I think the right now, the Mets have a lot of positives out of the rotation, but I think they're going to need length. Now, Mendoza talked about this a little bit, about the length of the rotation, and indicated that, hey, you know, it'll come. I don't think they want to start throwing these guys into the 100, 110 pitch limit. But ultimately, I believe if you're going to be a successful team, you want your starters to go into the sixth inning. You want to push them to about 110 pitches. There is, now that's not just a hard and fast rule. You want it to be where that part of the lineup, if you're going the third or, you know, three and a half times through the lineup, you're going against Bichette and Guerrero and Santander and guys like that. You don't want to set up a guy for failure and say, well, it's another, you know, 10, 12 pitches. Why not? No. There's where you got to use your noodle. That's where you got to use your common sense. But if you're going into the sixth inning and you're at the bottom of the order, like, push the guy to give you the extra inning. Like, save the bullpen bullets for another day. Give a Kranick a day off, or force the Mets to only use X guys. Because every day, if you're going to use Brazenbaum and Kranick and guys like that too much, especially if you burn them out the first 30 to 45 days of the season, then you're going to have a problem. And then you're going to, whatever they've, mojo they've put out there, whatever positivity they've put out there, you know, that's gone when it's all said and done. So some positive, like, there's a lot of positives with the rotation. The length is a problem. The walks are a problem. I think Clay Holmes is a big part of the walks. If you look, and I'm looking at the walks per nine innings, Griffin Canning's got 4.7. Peterson had a horrible day today. You know, they're pretty much all, with the exception of Senga, who's the guy you'd expect. Really, even McGill's at 3.5. They're walking a little bit more than you like. So the Mets have kind of solved some of the walk issue in the bullpen side, which late in games, that's big. Not as solved on the starting side. We'll see if that's a trend. A little too early to tell. But in the end, you got to feel good after nine games, guys. If you're not going to feel good about 6-3, where you really haven't had your big hitters get going yet, your starters aren't giving you more than five innings. Diaz has been, he was okay. He's bending but not breaking. I still don't see the old velocity. Something to look out for. It's not like everything has clicked the way the plan has been put in place. And they're 6-3. That's a pretty good place to be. I got to be honest with you. That's a pretty good place to be. So if you're upset and quibbling, and if you want to just look at the negative, well, so be it. You know, certainly there's some things that you could worry about. We just went over them here in the second half of the show. But overall, as we just dip our toe into this getting to know you pool, a lot of things that you should be happy about. So what's next? Obviously, we're going to continue to come to you every Sunday. I hope you've been enjoying, for those who subscribed, the content. So we're going to be mixing up during the week video and written content. I think the video content, depending on the topic, like if we were going to dive deeper into the Mets hitting off speed pitches, I think that's more of a written thing. But if we were just going to react to the big win in Miami like we did the other day, that's more of a video. I wanted to give you a short video. The videos are easy because they're easier to produce, and I want to get them out quick so that as you potentially in the morning get ready for your commute or whatever you do, or you're exercising, or you want to just do something quick before you go to work or whatever you do in the day, I want them quick. Some of the production that's required with a shorter show, that's a little bit more tedious. But we're also, and I promised this in the preseason, we're also going to do on the days off some shows too midweek. So stay tuned for that. That's something that you could look out for. But in general, a lot of content over here for those who just listen to the show. Obviously, Beyond the Mic, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. If you're not a subscriber, we'd love to have you. It's an easy thing, and I try to make it as affordable as possible. There's promotions, and you know what? Your hard-earned dollar is your hard-earned dollar, and I know it's even harder right now with how crazy things are in the world. So I respect it, and I hope that it really is worth your time to help build this community, because like I said, I'm not the Walmart, I'm not Target, I'm not the big superstore, big supermarket, but I think we have a really cool, small neighborhood business that provides Mets fans a chance to get away from the craziness and the commoditization of media and break this down in a sane way. So if this show is overreaction, geez, Maybe this is about as overreacting as we get here at the Talking Mets podcast. Well, that's it. Hope everybody enjoyed this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets NoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcast service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.